Tony Gosling is a terrific journalist. There are not many left like him in the world, let alone the UK. The host of the politics show at BCFM in Bristol. Of course, a one-time BBC journalist. Let's welcome back. He's working very hard on his own programme and some very interesting issues today in Bristol, but he's kind enough to jump out of work for 25 minutes or thereabouts to speak with you and me. Tony, welcome back. It's an absolute shit show, Brexit. What's happening? What's going on, Tony? How do you read it? Welcome, by the way, buddy.
So I think it's fascinating to see what's been going on with this new government suddenly popping up on the scene this week. I mean, it's so different to the old Theresa May government, completely different. And this is because, number one, because May was never elected by the Conservative Party to be the leader. Secondly, because her husband, Philip, from Capital Group in Los Angeles was running the show when it came to the Brexit negotiations. I mean, basically she was running a Remain government, which was, you know, including people like Hammond and the rest, who were pretending to be a Leave government. And all the times that she said she wanted to leave the EU were lies. And now we've got a government whose heart is actually in it. Now, that has manifested itself. I think it's absolutely extraordinary over the last couple of days in some big, big tectonic plates shifting. Number one is the Labour Party changing its mind about having a general election.
Yeah.
So they've been calling for the last 2 years, Corbyn has, and you'll love this, knowing how much you
I love the man.
Suspect Mr. Corbyn. he's now changed his mind. He doesn't want a general election. And so effectively Boris has called his bluff. Now, I mean, this is the wonder of politics, isn't it? Because you've got all these political class people who decide what they want to do and try and dress it up as, oh, we're just doing what the people want. Well, of course, that's not been happening ever since the referendum result. And what we've had is a whole bunch of pretend thoughts and ideas from May and her friends about, oh, we're trying our best to leave. Now, when the Irish backstop thing came up, it was obvious that that was never going to be acceptable in the UK because it meant separating Northern Ireland off from the rest of the UK. Now, I mean, you know, the EU and the Republic can have a go at that if they want, and they can try and use the Brexit vote to do that, but it's never going to stick. And so the other thing is, I mean, apart from the complete U-turn of Corbyn, it's really shown that he's afraid of a general election. In a general election, it looks as if it may well be that Boris romps home. Obviously, the Brexit Party might cause some problems there, but it may be that Corbyn gets a bloody nose from the electorate. And so that's, it seems to me, is what Corbyn thinks he may do. And now he's fighting shy of it. But this announcement today, Richie, by Sajid Javid, shows we've got a completely different bunch of people in charge. So ever since Cameron departed, we've had Theresa May from the Home Office, you know, who in charge of the close down of prisons, the sacking of thousands of police, tens of thousands of police, the sacking of loads of prison officers, the lack of funding of the justice system, closing loads of courts. She was behind all that, and as Prime Minister, continued with all the cutbacks in public spending. We've now got a bit of a more traditional Conservative Party there who realise that they need to keep these services going. They need to run the country well and effectively and properly fund public services. Otherwise, they're going to be booted out. And so that's what we've seen is this increase, a massive increase in public spending of nearly 14 billion today announced by Sajid Javid. And all Labour seem to be able to do is complain about it, even though it's what they've been asking for the last, 9 years since the austerity programme started, Richie.
Tony, you're absolutely spot on. I'm going to play devil's advocate for Corbyn, amazingly enough. I am, because it's been said today that he's running scared of an election. Now, pre-2017, it looked very bad for the Labour Party in the opinion polls as well, all of them. In fact, you'll remember, pre-2017, we were told that opinion polls had been reworked because of their failures right up until 2017. They got so many things wrong. They got Brexit wrong. They got the Scottish referendum wrong. And we were told that by 2017, they had fixed all the glitches in the opinion polls. And those opinion polls in 2017 suggested that Labour was going to get a shellacking in the election of 2017, and Labour didn't. And today we're being told that Labour is polling very, very badly, again because in the north of the country, many Labour constituencies voted to leave, And Corbyn is kind of caught between two stools, as you said to me on the programme before. So I would say, let's not necessarily believe the polls that say Labour is doing very badly. Labour might do very well in the forthcoming general election. That momentum vote, that massive young vote, I mean, the 20-something vote, the 20 to 25s, 20 to 35s, they are almost universally in favour of staying in the European Union. Maybe Corbyn will come out of it, forming a coalition government maybe, supported by the Liberal Democrats, Change UK, the SNPs, and maybe some of, maybe some independents that might win seats at the next election, Tony.
Okay, so the fact remains, whatever you just said, that polls are very, very much, there's a lot of over-egging of puddings goes into polls.
Yeah.
But, you know, so there's a lot of money behind them. So basically, whoever pays for the poll gets the results that they want.
That's exactly
what happens. And that was one of the reasons why we got completely wrong polling before the election of Trump and before the Brexit referendum. The proof of the pudding is in the eating, right? Now, in the last general election, 2017, what we had was the majority of MPs elected were in Leave constituencies. So the majority of MPs should be voting Leave in these various votes if they were following what the people in their constituencies voted for. But the trouble is we've got a political class that's grown up over the years that has spied this Brussels gravy train, this corporate gravy train, because really the big business and Brussels are the same thing. You know, that they are multinational, they're across national boundaries, that if there's one country that legislates against a particular company, then that business will be moved out of that country. That's the way they work. It's a kind of a mafia, really. So they have ultimatums. They'll say, well, look, if you decide you're going to do this and bring these laws in, we're off. And this is the way that the bankers operate, and it's the way that the big companies operate. And Brussels is very much the same. Basically, they are the people who make all the laws and facilitate the actions of these multinational corporations. So I think what we've got is a political class, mostly, actually in the Labour Party, who are anti-Corbyn. They're pro-war. These are the people that vote for things like war in Syria, that kind of thing. And those are the ones who are now trying to stop Brexit. Because that's actually what's really going on here. What we've got is a bunch of Remainers trying to find every different excuse to come up with why they might be pro-Brexit. Now, remember, all these people stood on a we will implement the Brexit vote platform, both main parties, at the last general election.
Right.
Yet what they're doing is totally the opposite. Now, look, Richie, just a thought experiment. Imagine if California had voted to leave the USA. What's happening here is really a kind of a crisis, really, in the US, which has been obviously going for centuries, but a similar thing in the EU, which has an arrogant attitude that they are now a corporate superstate. In fact, we had Karl von Habsburg a few months ago saying, oh, this is entertaining watching the British try to leave, because I know they won't be able to. They can't.
Yeah.
We already control their country. So, and he was, he's the president of the Pan-European Union, who back in the 1920s, formed in Munich, a couple of years after the Nazi, or before the Nazi party. And they have been the main people, the aristocracy behind the scenes, the rich and powerful, wealthy aristocracy of Europe, who've been trying to get this whole plan going. So that's, I think, what's really playing out here, is you've got a whole political class that are bought and paid for. A lot of the political parties get their donations from these massive, powerful, pro-Brussels corporate interests. And of course, the mainstream media is exactly the same. They also are going for keeping their investments in tax havens, the big media corporations, the Daily Mail, Empire, Sky, Murdoch, all those people. And they are basically drifting in the same direction as all these massive banks and companies, which is, we want a super state. We want one place in the whole of Europe that we can go to lobby to get what we want. We don't want to go around 20 different countries, 20 different capitals, because those countries can possibly play us off against each other. We want to control the continent, and that's, I'm afraid, the real reason why all these MPs at the moment are doing everything they can, coming up with any excuse possible to try and delay Brexit and possibly force another referendum. And it's absolutely wide open easy for anyone to see the way that Corbyn has backtracked on having a general election to see exactly what they're up to.
Yeah, well said, Tony. We'll never leave the European Union. I've been saying it for years. You're talking to an Irishman who covered Nice, who covered the Lisbon Treaty. I've been following the European Union and how it operates for over 20 years. Tony Gosling is our guest this week, .org.uk. We'll leave Brexit for the moment. However this election scenario plays out, we won't be leaving the European Union anytime soon, I don't think. I'm fascinated. I rang you this morning and you said something very interesting to me. Tony has got a network of sources and informants around the country. I'm not joking when I say this. People who tip him off to interesting things going on. You mentioned the warmongers on the Labour backbenches. Wasn't it disgusting a couple of years ago to hear Hillary Benn beating the drum for war with Syria? That bastard has made me sick. But anyway, we'll leave that alone for now. Let's talk about war, because people are telling you about war manoeuvrings and bases in this country and planes. That's worrying, if not wholly surprising, Tony. What are you hearing?
Okay, well, look, let's just look at the US Air Force bases and the National Security Agency bases presence in Britain. Really starting with the north, then there's Filingdales and Menwith Hill. Both, they've gone on the outside of these bases, it says RAF. Of course, they're not RAF at all. They are NSA and US Air Force. Then there's RAF Lake and Heath. Actually, just a bit north of that is Warrington. And I was hearing earlier on about the possible presence of Israeli aircraft at Warrington.
No.
But that is just a rumour. That's just a rumour, and that's from people who live locally. Having, you know, this is basically, you know who drives all this? It's the good old plane spotters, you know, the nerds.
Right, with their vacuum
flasks.
Yeah.
Like the guys that stand writing the numbers of trains down, but instead they're at the runway watching what's landing and what's taking off. And so they're a fascinating source of information. In fact, these people, Richie, bless them, were those that exposed the whole rendition programme back sort of 8-10 years ago of these CIA secret flights taking people to secret prisons around the world. So let's, you know, give them a good old pat on the back for sticking those camera lenses into those so-called secret US bases. But anyway, in Norfolk, they've then got Mildenhall and Lakenheath. RAF Molesworth over there too. There's Croughton in the Midlands. Welford, which is on the M4. If any of your listeners drive along the M4, you'll find it. It says works unit only. It's somewhere near Swindon, and you can turn off to this massive explosives storage base. Well, you probably advise not to turn off there.
Yeah.
And the final one, which is near me, is RAF Fairford. Now, these B2 bombers have definitely been spotted and photographed at Fairford. A small flight of them from the US are over here at the moment. These are the so-called stealth bombers, even though actually the Russians say, well, we can see them on the radar, and everyone says we can see them on the radar, so they're not actually that stealthy. But they were the same aircraft that we used earlier on to bomb Syria, and have been used to bomb Iraq. And what they do is they actually have a range from the UK where they can fly out from here to bomb the Middle East. So they've been used before. They're now here doing what they've called training. And the reason we know about this is because they've been waking people up in Stroud at 3 o'clock in the morning as they're flying in over the city or the town. And thankfully, some of the Stroudies I'm in touch with have just been giving me a call saying, look at this, Tony. And it's popped up also in Gloucestershire Live. I'm not sure if it's the Stroud News and Journal. Anyway, one of the local newspapers has been inviting photographs and getting a tremendous number of photos of these aircraft that have been training, not just in Fairford, which is in Gloucestershire, but also they've also been spotted flying backwards and forwards to Norfolk, to Lakenheath and Mildenhall.
So this sounds a bit irregular, Tony. It doesn't sound like a common thing, because some listeners might think, well, we know the US has got a big presence in the UK in army bases. Now, when I say we know, a few of us know, thanks to people like you, we know. You and I used to talk about this during my days on the radio in Spain, funnily enough, about US bases in this country, but I think the vast majority of the public don't really know. So could it be that this is just routine training flights, or is it irregular? And if it is irregular, what might be going on?
Well, the B2s definitely are irregular. I mean, there were some aircraft over here, I think B-52s, a couple of months ago, but they were for a specific exercise. These, they're not saying anything about why they're here, really. But in the past, what we've seen is these kinds of unannounced presence of US B-2 bombers are before precision strikes. So this is, when I say precision, obviously, you know, they can't be that precise. But we're talking about, say, for example, if there's a particular Iranian military facility or Syrian military facility or palace or whatever that they decide they want to hit. Of course, they went for Gaddafi's palace when that conflict was on. These are the sorts of aircraft that they would use for that. So that's the sort of thing I'd expect to actually come out of this in the next maybe weeks or months is some. And of course, what happens once those aircraft are there, Richie, they chug into a little hangar and they just hang around. So they don't, you don't, wouldn't necessarily think anything of it until they then come out again, in maybe a month or 2 months time and go on a mission. But, what I've asked the people down there to do is to just give me a call if they hear them taking off late at night. And you know what? You will hear them over London. This is the way it works. You can hear them in London unless I suppose they divert down to the channel or something. Cause I can remember in the bombing of Kosovo, we could hear the Fairford, aircraft that had taken off flying over the top of London. They sound completely different to the normal sort of, you know, aircraft that would be landing at Heathrow Airliners, that sort of thing. They're much higher and there's a much deeper tone. But that's, I'm afraid, we are just Airstrip 1, aren't we?
Simple as that. And while you're talking about that, a great friend of ours, the programme, Jean-Anne Crowley, the Irish actress and journalist, Jean-Anne says, and it's sad to have to agree with her, that the US, the military, uses Shannon Airport like a bus stop. It's there all the time. And, you
well, that's
know.
That's right. And that's mainly used for troops. I think what happens troops, is they come from the US and they're basically, they're like kind of airliners, really. And they're full up with soldiers. And as they're rotated in places like Afghanistan and the Middle East. So, you know, one tour of duty, the soldiers will get on the plane and a whole bunch will get off, fresh from the US from, you know, and that's what Shannon is used for mainly.
We know that everything, the US, the UK mainstream media is focused almost exclusively on the Brexit nonsense at the moment. But you and I know, because we look at the newswires from other countries, particularly countries in the Middle East, that the situation in the Strait of Hormuz is very, very tense at the moment. You've got UK naval vessels and US naval vessels right on the edge of Iranian waters, escorting ships there. It's incredibly tense there. We know that the Israeli government is desperate to launch strikes against inside Iran. How do you, you know, I talked to...
Well, I mean, okay, so what Israel's been doing over the last week
what's happened there?
It's amazing, isn't it? To see attacks on Lebanon, I mean, this is airstrikes from Israel, some drone strikes, some from military aircraft. In Lebanon, in Syria, and in Iraq, the Israelis seem to think they can just hit whoever they want. And what they're trying to say is that these are all preparations by Iran to attack Israel from these various countries. Well, there's no evidence for that whatsoever, of course. And so the idea really, I think, here is to just try to provoke the Iranians into something. The Iranians are not like that. They're not going to be provoked. I think that's pretty certain, although we've seen from Nasrallah over in Lebanon that they are now hitting across the border. They've said that they are now hitting one Israeli vehicle. The Israelis have denied this. They said, oh, they didn't hit anything. Although if you look at the footage that the Lebanese have released, it does look as if they've destroyed an armored personnel carrier. I think the only excuse I can imagine for the Israelis is that this was a remote controlled armored personnel carrier with nobody in it.
Yeah.
That's the only explanation I can have, or else the Israelis are just lying.
Yeah, and the Western media, of course, reports what it is told by the IDF. Obviously, it doesn't do any investigation of its own. Here's a very interesting story, which I know you will be aware of. Some of our listeners won't be aware of. The BBC and other... I think we might have just lost Tony there, did we? Momentarily, he might have just dropped. That sounds like you've lost somebody, doesn't it? That. Let's take it. There he is now ringing me back. Look, I've got to mute those bloody noises. Tony, thanks. We lost you momentarily. I was just going to ask you about a story that the BBC has covered this morning, and I think it was in the Telegraph as well, and that is the UK, the United States, France, and Iran, amazingly, may be complicit in war crimes in Yemen over their support for various parties in the conflict there, according to, as I said, the United Nations. How much stock do you put in that story? Western powers may be held accountable for what they've done in Yemen, of course, by what they've done, the UK, of course, and the United States, sending Saudi Arabia weapons of death and destruction, which have been used to murder innocent people in Yemen. What do you think of that, United Nations?
Well, I think okay, so this is something which may change under this new government, under Boris. It's entirely possible. Because I think the foreign, as I understand, the Foreign Commonwealth Office have been putting quite a lot of pressure on the politicians over the last few years, saying, look, ease off, because this support for Saudi Arabia could blow back in our face. And also ease off Iran, because this pressure the Americans are putting on us is putting us in the firing line, which we don't want to be. And it may well be that the new government under Boris may go along with that a little bit more, that Foreign Commonwealth Office advice. And that actually, you know, this is one of the things that is always impossible since the new government has only just come in. But remember, the tanker seizure over in Gibraltar was Jeremy Hunt's work. So he's the kind of the old guard. He's the former foreign secretary under the May government. And this really was a Bankster government under May. And so I think we've got a bit of a new, I mean, I'm not holding out my hopes massively, but 14 billion of new spending is going to make an enormous difference to, you know, teachers and all that sort of thing, to, you know, police, firemen, all this, all the public servants that we've got. It's going to make a massive difference. And I think in foreign policy, we might see a reflection of that with a little bit more of a sensible approach, which is more in line with the Foreign Commonwealth Office advice that we've been seeing. And also, of course, this means a potential change in attitude to Israel to a certain extent. I mean, we've seen, obviously, Priti Patel taking over at the Home Office, which is horrendous. I mean, although, I mean, that means really that the Israelis have got a link straight into British domestic policy.
As if they needed any more, let's be honest.
The criminal justice system here. But the rest of the government does seem as if it may take a bit of a different attitude to Trump and his pro-Israeli, you know, pro-Jerusalem being the capital, anti-Iranian attitude. And so there may be a bit of common sense kicking in with this new government, Richie.
I hope you're right, but I don't agree with you. And when I say that, no, and when I say that with the utmost respect, because I have enormous respect for your reasoning, and you're very often right, but I don't see it. Israel is...
Well, I just have a different feel with these people. With Sajid Javid and Boris, I think you've got almost human beings out there who are not totally controlled. Obviously, it takes a while for the dark forces within the civil service and the big corporate lobbyists and the banksters to blackmail our politicians when they're in office into doing what they want. So we're bound to get a bit of a feel of that. But I think I may have something a bit genuine here. Look, with Boris, particularly with Iran, remember, he revealed that Nazanin Zaghari Ravkilif, who the Iranians have got in custody, actually was over there as a journalist. Now, he wasn't supposed to say that, but it's the truth. And, you know, that's the reason why she shouldn't have been. I mean, that basically, the stuff we've been being spun through the press was nonsense about her just being over there touring, you know. No,
oh, yeah.
She was doing journalist training. And that's why the Iranians nabbed her, because they believed that she was doing spying as part of that, and that she was trying to subvert the journalistic process over in Iran. So by Boris coming out with that, that does say something a little bit about there may be different factions in the Foreign Office, and some of them egging him on when he was Foreign Secretary to actually tell the truth. And so this is a positive thing. But of course, there's always the pressure, as there has been on Trump over the last three or four years, to steer away from what he originally committed to. So, you know, I think we just need to hold our politicians up sometimes, particularly when we've got a new broom in, and say, look, guys, come on, let's just get on with it. And I'd love to see him, of course, leave the EU on the 29th of October. It looks like it's a bit of a tall order, though.
Well, do you know, as we're speaking, the bill against no deal has passed the first Commons vote. So this is breaking. I hate to say breaking news. It's very MSM crap, but this is news. It's just happening. 329
for, 300 against. Do to stop this. Yeah, so there may be little tricks that he's got up his sleeve, cards up his sleeve, or whatever, you know, to kick this into the long grass. Because I think that, you know, they're determined to leave. Whether or not that will happen, it may be a general election. Who knows?
Hang on a second.
To talk about Hong Kong a bit as well.
I know, let's do that. We've got 10 minutes left on this, maybe 12 or 13 if you want, but before we do talk about Hong Kong, because it is very important, because I'm very intrigued by it, a lot of reporters are saying that Johnson is in serious trouble here, because more Tory backbenchers have basically rebelled against him and gone with the Ramoners. Like I said, it's 329 to 300. This is pretty devastating, really. They're taking no deal out of his hands completely. They're now shortly going to vote to force him to ask the European Union to extend the whole process till January 31st, meaning he wouldn't leave on October 31st. It's a kind of a shit show, if I can be so crass. And while I get such a lot of my predictions wrong, I've called this one to the letter in terms of this is how the European Union would win the day and prevent us ever leaving. But look, we that's splitting hairs. I know we're going to talk about this again in the very near future. You're right that Hong Kong is phenomenally interesting. Carrie Lam, the chief executive, earlier today, because of course it's later in the evening there, seemingly has given the protesters what they wanted and agreed to take this extradition bill, this extradition plan, away to basically to bin it, seemingly giving the protesters what they've wanted. We've had weeks of these protests, seemingly barbaric treatment by the police there against the protesters, the protests growing and growing in number. I'm always very suspicious when I see these street protests, Tony, because I'm... you know, I think of Arab Spring, I think of the people behind those types of protests. How have you read this whole thing? What's going on there?
Well, I mean, I spent a couple of weeks in Hong Kong about 2 years ago, and I visited the, in fact, interviewed several journalists at the Foreign Press Bureau there. It's actually, it's a Foreign Press Club. And the sense there was very much a sort of siege mentality. You know, we're going to stick to the way we do things. The Chinese are going to try and bully us. And it wasn't just the press. This was people I spoke to in the street as well. Ordinary people are very much aware that they've got a very authoritarian state on their doorstep, which is what China is, extremely authoritarian. And I don't, I mean, I take what you say when you see these big movements out on the street, you know, is this being Soros funded or MI6 funded or whatever, but there's a genuine, I mean, when you get a million people out, it's quite genuine fears that the Hong Kong people have about being run from Beijing. They really don't want it. I mean, just look, for example, at some of the, I think it's Hansan, that's one of the cities which is the most polluted on earth. It's a horrendous place to live and work. The kids grow up choking. You know, there's also the effect on those in the west of the country, the Uyghurs who are being put into these kind of re-education camps by the million, you know. So the Chinese government is not something to dice with. And I think what's happened here is it's really simple in my view. They've, the Chinese, Beijing have been looking at this. They've been getting very threatening. They've been saying, in fact, last week, at the end of last week, they said, we are going to arrest anyone that comes out to protest at the weekend. We're banning these demonstrations. So the official people who run the demonstrations said, okay, no demonstrations this weekend, because that keeps them in the clear. But what happened? Nearly 500,000 people came out anyway to demonstrate. And to me, this sent a very, very clear message to Beijing that whatever they do, whatever they say, these protests are going to continue. And of course, there's a very reasonable, I mean, there's a whole precedent to this, by the way, which many people don't realize, which is when I was there, they were talking about the booksellers and the bookshop people who were being kidnapped effectively by the Chinese state and hidden away from their families for years. These are people who are selling expose books which are exposing things like the private life and the blackmail of President Xi, you know, the fact that he's not exactly squeaky clean. And these books were only on sale in Hong Kong. You couldn't get them in China. And the Chinese authorities arrested secretly without telling the families and kept them in jail for long periods of time without explaining anything about why they got them, the owners and the managers of this bookshop in Hong Kong. So this is one of the things that the Hong Kong people do want to be able to do, sort of just basically write things and publish them. This is effectively what this is all about. They're not allowed to criticize President Xi, apparently. They could be arrested for that, for laughing during the national anthem. You could be arrested for that in China. And Hong Kong is saying, we're not going down that road. We're definitely not going down there. By the way, the demands, only one of them has been met, but I mean, it's the main one, really.
The main one.
The demands, I think, are five main demands, which one is they want the bill to be withdrawn, which has been announced today, which is fantastic news. Also for Carrie Lam to step down. Well, maybe that demand might go now she's done what they've asked. Who knows? Also an inquiry into police brutality, which may well happen anyway. And for those who have been arrested to be released. And finally, This is those being arrested for non-violent offences to be released, and for greater democratic freedoms. And that's the bottom line, isn't it? What they want is some kind of democracy. The sort of democracy, by the way, which the British actually never gave them, but they're now saying, well, we want it, which is fair enough. And I think that even it's a real David and Goliath struggle, actually. And actually, the many people in China, ordinary people in China, are watching what's going on in Hong Kong very closely, because they can remember Tiananmen Square and they can remember their own pro-democracy movements from 20, 30 years ago, and they're thinking, well, actually, we rather admire the ability of the people of Hong Kong to get together and come out on the streets. And I think you're right, you know, there's a certain amount of MI6 probably egging this along. It's so incredibly well organized. For example, the airport protest was brilliantly organised, where they didn't actually stop anybody coming off the planes or getting to their planes or anything, didn't interrupt people checking in. They were just there, singing and chanting and handing out leaflets. So as soon as anybody comes into the country, they're immediately confronted by the fact that there's a mass movement here. Something very interesting and important is going on.
Yeah, I think that's outstanding analysis, Tony. It is lazy for people, including myself, to think that there's Western influence there. You've outlined brilliantly why people.
Well, I think there is a bit, you know, I think MI6 wouldn't be doing their job if they weren't giving a little bit of a hand to the protesters.
A little bit of a push to it. Yeah, but you did describe exactly what life is like for Christians, the Falun Gong, Chinese dissenters. You know, I speak for myself, because of my opinion of this country, because of my opinion of Israel, because of my opinion of the United States, it's easy to side with Russia and China and, you know, to claim that they're the benign victim in geopolitical events, but it's not the case. Russia's not the greatest place to be if you've got certain points of view. We know all about China's human rights record. I spent years as an activist, campaigning against capital punishment in every country in the world. It can be a dreadful regime, authoritarian as you described it. So it's excellent analysis, mate. I think the protests are genuine, and you're right to make the point that maybe dark actors see those protests and think, well, we can push them along because we have our own agenda, re-China. It's, you're absolutely spot on.
Well, they're so incredibly well organised. I've never seen anything quite like it. The way that the sites of the protests keep changing, that the leaders of the protests are totally invisible, that the leaders say, oh, we want everyone not to go to the protest this weekend, but 500,000 people turn up anyway. I mean, it just seems spectacularly well organised, and in fact, maybe a model for getting social change in any other kind of authoritarian regime.
Absolutely brilliant. Folks, you can hear Tony Gosling on the Politics Show on BCFM. It's thisweek.org.uk to find out all about it. It's a weekly program. It's outstanding. It really is. I listen to it all the time. I don't miss an episode of it. Thanks for your help today, mate, coming on to talk about that. Brexit, of course, the US military presence here and movements ongoing in this country on those bases, and, of course, that analysis of Hong Kong. I look forward to speaking to you again soon, and thanks for sticking up for free speech a couple of weeks ago when yours truly was being called anti-Semitic just because I happen to have people on the programme from time to time.
Well, Ricky, I've got to congratulate you before we say goodbye on your prediction of Epstein hanging himself. I mean, it's an absolutely precise bit of prediction. And, of course, the amazing thing in the roll-up after that is that Ghislaine Maxwell has not been arrested.
No.
I mean, she's clearly involved in this. In fact, possibly even a main player in this child sex trafficking, which has been going on for around about 20 years, involving all sorts of key people. And so, yet she still walks the streets. So it just shows what a joke the US criminal justice system is, and I suppose the British as well, since apparently she comes to London quite a bit. So she is the one that should be given a citizen's arrest, or certainly her collar should be felt, and she should definitely go to trial, and all this stuff would come out, because of course that's why Epstein was almost certainly suicided in jail, is because of the incredible testimony he would be able to come out with some of the most rich and powerful people in the Western world, and he would have potentially brought them down.
Do you know, that segues brilliantly into my second hour, because I'll be speaking to a guest and we will be focusing on that. I know you're going to be spending a bit of time on Ghislaine Maxwell as well. I'm sure we'll talk about that in the near future. Thanks again, Tony. I really appreciate it, mate. Thanks for your help. You honour me by coming on. Tony Gosling there, the host of The Politics Show on BCFM in Bristol, thisweek.org.uk. Cheers, Tony. Top man.